Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, this will be our final mailbag response show.
All right, man. Yeah, I'm excited to do this, and we got so many great questions out of this. That was awesome.
Bud Louisiana Hot Sauce. I mean, they make podcasts like these possible in general. They've been our title sponsor for 2 years now, somebody that we've been very fortunate to work with and couldn't ask for a better partner. And as far as a product that you and I both genuinely appreciate and enjoy and use in everyday life, it's great to be able to partner with people like them. And just want to remind people that they bring podcasts like these to them and make them possible.
Hey, man, you got questions at Louisiana Hot Sauce? The answers are simple. Three simple ingredients, one great product, Louisiana Hot Sauce, our title sponsor. Very appreciative to have them.
These are all kind of under our general umbrella of questions surrounding expectations. And with that, Bud, we'll move to the next one. What will define a good season for Taggart? 9 wins, 10 wins. And just as so, what would put him on the hot seat? Okay.
I would say that there is no, just to start off, to me, there is absolutely no record that puts Willie Taggart on the hot seat. At least no like conceivable record.
Until we lose three of our first four games. But yeah, no. Hot seat is not there's no real viable path to him being
like,
on
the what puts you on a hot seat? Like a massive scandal or something like that? That would do it. Hey, go 2-10 your first year and see if you're not on the hot seat come year two. So maybe I shouldn't say there's no record. There's no real conceivable record that you know legitimately could happen that would result in a hot seat, but you know, there are sort of inconceivable records that certainly, I guess, could. What would be a good season for Willie Taggart? I think if he wins 9 games, certainly that'd be a good season in a year that, look, we were already expecting to be a down year anyway, I think. Your opportunity to really, you know, hashtag do something, they were squandered. That was 2016 and 2017. You're completely rebuilding on defense and you're installing a new offense. You have a very difficult schedule, probably the most difficult schedule you've faced in quite a while, having to go, you know, play Notre Dame on the road, having to play Miami on the road. You get Florida and Clemson in Doak. You also have to go and you host Virginia Tech. You know, playing Notre Dame and getting both Miami and Va Tech from the Coastal Division is a nightmare. Florida State's over-under win total, I think, is going to come out at 8.5. And so people are going to freak out about that. They're going to say, wait, Vegas thinks we're going 8-4, 9-3? Yeah, and I don't think Vegas is wrong necessarily. Like, you could have a winning record in the following games, right? At Notre Dame, host Clemson, host Florida, at Miami, and host Virginia Tech, right? That's 3-2. And then you go, 6-1 in your remaining 7, and you're 9-3. That's a hell of a year,
I would say. On February 15th, I would probably take that right now.
No doubt.
I really would.
Yeah. No, and here's the thing. If you go 9-3, we know because of the conference bowl tie-ins that you are most likely going to be able to get into a bowl where you're going to be favored. So if you go 9-3, I like your chances to get 10 wins on the year, including the bowl game. You know, 8-4, I think a lot of people would be disappointed. I wouldn't be crushed. It's a coach's first year. There's going to be some kinks to work out. There's no doubt. And it's a roster that is not bad, but it's certainly flawed in spots, like we've talked about. I'm not real confident that there's a lot of talent at the linebacker spot. And we'll see what happens with the quarterback. The quarterback who I think a lot of people think should start is not going to be healthy for spring ball, which is a big-time deal if you're installing a new offense. So I think 9 wins would be a good season. I think 10 wins would be a great season with this schedule. Great.
What's more likely in the next 4 years, Florida State having a 4-loss season or winning a national championship?
I answered this guy on Twitter and I said, look, this isn't really fair. There's not going to be any debate about this. I said, flip it. What's more likely in the next 4 years, a 4-win season or a national title? That's more interesting. 4-8 or a national title? What's more likely to happen?
I would hope that. I don't think I'm being optimistic or Homer here. I would see us winning a national championship before taking 4 wins out of a season. Only taking 4 wins out of a season.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there because generally in the ACC there's a couple automatics and generally in the non-conference a couple automatics and it's very hard for me to see them not combining to get 5 wins in a year.
So what's the path to 4 wins? Francois leaving, Blackman now, getting injured.
If it's going to happen, it's going to happen this year,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, and so that's how you get there. Either you see a concentration of injuries at that particular position, or
It's the Florida model from 2013. Mm-hmm. You lose your top couple quarterbacks. You got a walk-on playing.
Right.
And everybody knows you can't throw, and so they just load up against the run, and you lose every game, you know, 17-13.
Nah, man, I would I would think that us going to like the IM field and getting a quarterback would just loosen up that offense even more. If we're going to be in that place, I would expect Willie to be still trying to chuck it around a decent amount. I don't see us going all Muschamp model of maybe losing to a team like Georgia Southern where you don't complete a pass or some crazy influence or confluence of events that lead to something like that.
Well, that did happen.
Yeah. Was that just a rambling way to find a reference to...
to the 4-8 season, yeah.
to lose to Georgia Southern at home where you didn't complete a pass? Who knows?
Man, that's awesome. I think you're right that national championship is more likely. I think it's like slightly more likely, man. I don't think it's like a ton more likely, personally. Just because the chance for injury is absolutely there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The chance for injury and then the uncertainty that exists at the most important position on the field. I agree that would be how it would have to happen. And hopefully we can look back next February and with a recruiting class put together that we see that maybe we feel confident that would have been the only window in which something like that could have happened. So. Next question, Bud. Kind words from somebody here as he writes, just discovered your show, and it's the best podcast by far. I appreciate you saying that. Love your level of professionalism and attention to detail. Here's my question. What does Florida State and Coach Willie Taggart need to do to get back to realistically competing for a playoff spot?
In this year, they would need a time machine and convince these guys from Clemson not to stay at Clemson. As far as going forward, you need to develop.
If you're giving me a time machine, I need for us to impact that Justin Fields recruitment.
Yes,
as well.
Yeah, yeah. To not screw up the Justin Fields recruitment, that would absolutely be something. I feel like that is an important thing to do. I don't think you can get Justin Fields and Willie Taggart.
Yeah, that's
true. So you might be stuck with the sinking ship of Jimbo there. Okay, so I don't think the roster is that far off in playoff contention. I think that you have a. I think they're going to make the playoff under Willie Taggart. I don't think it's like not going to happen. You're going to need the offensive install to go well. You're going to need to keep recruiting at a high level. You need to develop some linebacker talent for sure. Quarterback is going to be huge. You got to figure out who you want to be the guy there and whether that's Blackman or Francois. You need Francois to be healthy if that's the guy. Otherwise, you need Blackman to keep putting on some weight. You need the schedule to break right for you. We've had a lot of different teams make the playoff. Now, winning a national championship is a little bit different. You need to get a whole lot of luck to have that happen typically. But I think they'll be able to make the playoff. I mean, they're one of the more talented teams in the conference, and I think they'll be well coached. So I'm not super worried about their ability to compete for playoff spots. It's just, is it going to happen this year? No, and I don't think I would have projected it to happen under Jimbo, even before the disaster. It's just This was always a year that we could point to as we talk about windows in sports, right? This is the 2-year window for this team to win, or hey, this guy's contract's up, right? Well, there's no contracts as far as players in college football, but there is eligibility. You knew you'd be losing Josh Sweat and Derwin and McFadden and all those guys off this defense. You had a 2-year window to win, 16 and 17, to really make an impact. And you know, everybody said, well, the quarterback's too young to do it in 16 with Francois. But I'm like, look, not really. I mean, and I said this before the year, obviously I didn't know Tua was going to go win the national title, but young quarterbacks do this stuff all the time. It's about the overall talent level on the team and how ready it is, and they blew those chances in 16 and 17, combined for 9-10 losses over 2 years. That's not going to get done. But we all knew that 18 would be a down year, which is both good and bad for Willie. It's bad because I don't think a lot of the fan base has that perspective, and they don't really see the long term and remember that the peaks and the valleys, that kind of thing. It's good because I think your 2019 schedule is actually easier, if I recall. Who do they get in 19? Yeah, in 19 they get Boise State and Jacksonville, Louisiana Monroe. Their road games in conference, Boston College, Clemson, Wake Forest, and UVA. Their home games, Louisville, NC State, Syracuse, Miami.
Going to Charlottesville. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm going to go ahead and say there's a pretty good chance I'll be at that game. So look forward to that.
There you go. Your tough roadies that year are Clemson and Florida. All right. But, you know, you're otherwise, you get everybody else at home. That is actually tough for the most part. Shouldn't be losing Boston College anymore. Shouldn't, you know, Wake Forest is not a real intimidating road game. 19 could be a real big year for this team. There's no doubt. And that's something to look forward to. You could make the playoff in 19. Clemson stands to lose a whole lot on defense. Their offense might be pretty scary. 19 could also be a year that two teams get sent from the league. So, you know, I don't think they're that crazy far off from making a playoff spot.
I don't think they're all that far off, Bud. And ultimately, I think what Florida State can and ultimately has the ability to look after itself. I do think that I don't know if you're going to need help from Clemson, but you have, like, it'll be real interesting to see if Clemson can continue with the success, but really continue with kind of the culture of the program. It's a pretty strong thing overall. Historically, that's hard to keep. That starts to erode after a period of time, and it can really start to erode when you have a ton of guys who, albeit have chosen to come back to school, but who have a ton of guys who have kind of already made their money and at this point are kind of trying to protect themselves ultimately for Sunday. So I'm just interested to see there. I would love to think of a situation where two schools from this conference would go to a playoff, but I think you kind of have to acknowledge that one of the highest performing programs in all of college football right now not only exists within your league, but exists within your division. And that's going to be quite the chore and a mountain to climb.
It really will be, but it'll be a fun, I think it'll be fun to watch Willie try and climb that mountain. Couple more here, Ingram. Hey, guys, just wanted to say great job these last few months for being pretty damn spot on with everything. We appreciate it. 5-star reviews for that, hopefully, and keep those rolling. We like being number one by a mile with those. Basically took the surprise out of everything, but I loved it. Well, cool. Obviously, Willie did a great job doing what he could with the recruiting class to finish it off at 11th, according to 247, which was a hell of a job by him and the rest of the support staff. However, obviously, it's not where FSU's used to being. A lot of people didn't like that we said this was like a C-minus class without the curve, man. But I think we were right about that.
There were some holes. There were some holes.
How much do you think this one, quote, off year impacts next season and those after it on the field? Or do you think it was good enough with what was already in place just to keep rolling and keep expectations high? I just keep thinking about what Willie and the rest of the staff have done with lesser talent, and I can't help but keep my hopes up. Thanks again for everything. Already rated 5 stars. Oh, there you go. And would do it again if I could. Actually, I think you can rate 5 stars multiple times if it's sufficient time. So if you were one of those, like, early adopters of the 5 stars, and you gave us 5 stars back in like 2015, 2016. See if you can give us 5 stars again. We'd love to have it. So, my general thought on this is that unless it's a total disaster, one recruiting class does not screw up a program. It's got to be a back-to-back type situation. And I don't think that's going to happen because we already seen who they're bringing in for junior day come Saturday and who they're going to bring in for the next junior day. And I think you're going to do a really good job on the recruiting trail. So, no, I don't think it's going to affect them on the field too much. I do think that the one area to watch, and we'll talk about this more, Anger maybe disagree with me here, is quarterback, because not that I loved James Foster at all, but missing on a QB in 18 means that you've got to bring in a quarterback in 19 who's that much better simply because you're going to need him to be ready earlier. Mm-hmm. He's not going to have that extra year of development in your program. The other area where I think it impacts you is linebacker, because now you need to sign 4 linebackers in the 2019 class, and good luck getting 4 studs to sign up in the same class. It's much easier to convince 3 to do it, having signed 2 the year before, than going 1-4, because guess what? There aren't 4 starting linebacker spots, right. So most dudes are not going to sign up for that.
And really, there's not 3. You can just kind of play off the traditional mentality that everybody has with how many linebackers there are on the field. But
correct. Okay, which coaching change do you see making the most immediate impact positive on this roster?
Ultimately, I think you had a really good defensive ends coach prior, and a guy who taught some of the fundamentals of that position and was really skilled, was a great asset up into a period of time. I'm not like airing dirty laundry here, but of all the coaches who had a nuclear falling out, that was probably the first one with Jimbo Fisher. And you, yeah. You didn't get anything from him last year. Anything, really. He I'm at a point. That's a prideful guy. And at a point, he basically just said,
checked out,
you to everybody involved, and was out. And so I'm not saying that as though you didn't have a good coach at defensive end. You did. But you have a chance to have a significant turnover in every aspect and the toxic culture that existed within that one little sub position group is you're absolutely right about.
I think that's a great answer. I'm going to say Harlan Burnett.
And that's a better answer. It is.
No, I don't think it is. But I got to pick one that's not that because you hit the one on the head for sure. Because they're not going to have a GA coaching the defensive ends.
Very true. But as far as the change and level of play, and I'm very fond of the guy who was coaching there prior, but not necessarily as a teacher of scheme and fundamentals, I think you have a chance at a massive, massive upgrade in what's being taught and some of the fundamentals of the position.
Absolutely. I think that one's a good one. I would say Dave Kelly at receivers coach, but the thing is, like, their receivers are going to be asked to do less. So how do you separate coaching from expectations there is an interesting thing to be thinking about.
But probably an appropriate place to think Madison Social and the people at For the Table Restaurant Group, somebody that we've been able to partner with since day one. We could not have anybody better to work with, ever so fortunate, and we're excited. We're excited to be able to continue to work with them, and we're really excited to be able to talk about something that will be new for us and have a little bit of a in-person interaction and experience leading up to the spring game.
Absolutely, man. Madison Social and the Ford Table Restaurant Group, they've been with us since the beginning. Maybe do a little debut a new beer at Township for a little pregame action for the spring game. Pretty awesome. More details on that to come, but a chance to come meet us, come interact, come meet fellow Knollcast fans and fellow Knolls at a great Knoll-owned business before you get to watch the new offense in Doak Campbell Stadium. So very appreciative of those guys, and we'll have more details on those events for you soon. Full disclosure, we did all three of these episodes at one time. So Judson's just cutting them up into three roughly equal shows. Do you have any idea how Taggart has traditionally structured the spring game at his previous schools? Look at this. These are just wild, like sort of we couldn't categorize these questions. Will be a draft, ones versus twos, one versus ones, etc. How would you prefer to see if it's structured based on the spring roster? Okay, so I went and did a little research on this, and here's what I found. Not much. Not really sure how to figure out what he did, but I do know that they do not do just offense versus defense with some weird scoring system where the defense can score points. They have two teams, for sure. At Oregon, they did it to honor the military. I think they had like Team Free and Team Brave, which is pretty cool. And they had a mix. They had like an offense and a defense on each team. So it's not this thing where it's just like a scrimmage. They literally had, you know, kind of ones and twos. I don't know how they were broken down. So that's something we'll have to wait and see. And oftentimes, just the health of your roster and the composition of your roster, Ingram, is what determines that. We saw Fisher change at times. Some years they had a draft.
Yeah.
Some absolutely. Years they didn't.
Frequently, the situation at any position group honestly can impact that. But really, it's what you can do along the lines of scrimmage frequently ends up dictating what your spring game looks like. So, Bud, with the next question is, what is the secret Louisiana hot sauce? Well done, sir. That allows. So, what is the secret sauce that allows Clemson to not only retain their defensive linemen when they are all high draft picks, but continue to recruit at such a high level? Is it Dabo, facilities, the pet rubbing rock? Where should we look?
I really don't know. We kind of addressed this earlier, and I don't know. Look, they have a really good staff. Certainly, they have a program that is fully committed to winning. There's no doubt. A lot of tradition there, but them keeping those guys is one of the all-time offseason mysteries for me. There's no way that you like college that much.
Yeah. And not that there's any position group that it's a good idea to go back to college, but a bunch of defensive linemen? Really?
You play Georgia Tech every year.
I mean,
your knees really? Are getting dove at.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, Clemson has... They've been slightly beneficial beneficiaries of good timing with some of their selective powers around them and when coaches were coming in and out and when coaches were operating at particular levels of effectiveness. But they made a, you know, they made a real commitment. They got fortunate with the manner in which they found Dabo. It's rare that the wide receiver coach becomes the interim head coach and then turns into a head coach that becomes one of the better performing people in his field. But they were also pretty patient with Dabo. There were a couple seasons there where he damn near got run out of town, and a lot of powerful people at Clemson one or two times wanted him gone, and it just never happened. So it's been a nice confluence of events, but what you referenced there, there's a full commitment to winning, and there's a commitment to providing all financial aspects as far as being able to hire a staff, being able to have a shadow staff, you know, maybe even be able to do what needs to be done on some of the dollars that aren't accounted for. But Clemson's in the business of being in the highest performers of college football, and they've certainly done that over the past 5 years. But we're ever so fortunate that we have the listening audience that we do, and I'm still pretty flattered when people refer to myself or either of us as experts. But one people that we know are absolutely experts in their field are our partners at Resolution Home Loans, and somebody that we're really excited to be able to bring a great service to people, very specific service to people at an exceptionally high level, Noel fans, podcast supporters, and excited, really excited for people to get to know the services and the people behind Resolution Home Loans.
Keeping with the mailbag theme, there are a lot of questions about the mortgage process as well. Chad and Shannon will walk you through it. They've got it all set up for you. Call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit fsuhomeloans.com. Dude, they can't make it more simple for you. Just a great company. We're very proud to rep them here, and let's get back into it. We know that Alabama is the standard when it comes to non-coach support staffs. So what does FSU support staff look like? Has head coach Willie Taggart tried to expand this? Some stuff I can't say yet because I'm still looking into some things. It is definitely not expanded, I will say that. Or has it pretty much stayed the same, the coaching transition? He's got a lot of spots that he needs to fill, certainly, after some guys have left and some guys, maybe some positions have been eliminated. I'm going to refrain from saying more on that until I have a better handle as to what exactly is going on, so I don't look like an idiot.
We'll ultimately get our thumb on the current situation, but it's an area that Florida State has done a better job in and can certainly continue to do.
Under Jimbo.
Under Jimbo, and still has room for improvement.
It's important that they keep doing the things that Jimbo got them to do.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. Next question, Bud, is how is Willie's fourth down math? Does fourth and two equal punt?
So I looked this up. As you recall, last year I wrote the article, Jimbo Fisher pairs snail's pace with college football's worst fourth down approach, which was not well received by Jimbo Fisher, not surprisingly. But it was, I think, one of the better things we've done in a while. So I looked it up. Jimbo's teams, 2010 to 2017, 56 fourth down attempts. 56.
There you go.
Not a lot. That is... God, that's bad. That's less than 8 per season. Willie's teams, 143. 56 versus 143.
And 143 is not some wild number either, by any means.
Right. It is slightly above average for that time frame. It is not like a crazy aggressive thing. I would like to see even more of that. However, it is a massive improvement on what Jimbo was doing. There's no doubt. They will go for it considerably more often than Jimbo did. I mean, the numbers are right there. I mean, that's almost triple. Dabo, Jim Bob Cooter, and Jimbo walk into a bar. Who orders the Pinot Grigio?
Oh, interesting.
It's the $75 million man,
yeah,
isn't it? With a pinky ring Jimbo's ordering that for sure.
I could see Dabo ordering some Pinot Grigio. Dabo's just a big old, you know, good intention cheese ball.
I want to hear Dabo say Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, that's true. I'd love to hear that Birmingham accent come out with Pinot Grigio. But he's an interesting character, man. Some of my friends in the Clemson media have given me some just hilarious stories about Dabo. He's a nice guy, but he's just an absolute cheese ball, and I could very easily see him ordering the Pinot Grigio.
Does Barnett classify his cornerback as boundary and field or left and right? This one's easy, boundary and field. I've watched some clinic tapes that he's put out there, and he absolutely uses boundary and field. So glad I could answer that one for you.
Here is a really interesting question. I always thought it was interesting when you guys talk about or mention the popularity of the podcast. I think it would be a neat subject to talk about some of the numbers of your shows or different podcasts have received, most listened to, listens this year versus last, basically just a lot of analytics question about the pod. Just talking about growth of the podcast in general. I am dying to go to Madso next time I make it to Tally. So, yeah, that'd be great, man. Hope you make it to Madso. If you do, mention that maybe the Nullcast sent you there. And if you're able to make it to Madso or any of the For the Table restaurant properties, remember what we're doing for the spring game there. So you're not going to share your numbers because that's not like basically you need to pay me before I start telling you our numbers. So I just mean that you're not going to have anybody that's really going to want to talk about their numbers specific.
Louisiana Hot Sauce, Meta Social, and Resolution Home Loans are very happy with their numbers for sure. I will say that our listenership grew 24% 2 years ago, and in the past year, it grew 47%. So
historically, our listenership has doubled every 2 years, and that's been fairly consistent. So there's been particular periods where we have had significant growth in listeners. Just think of some of the more pivotal moments in Florida State football. We certainly gained a lot with the coaching transition this year. Part of that was just because of general interest level. Probably part of that was because, in my opinion, we handled it well and gave you accurate information earlier than anybody else. So it's something that we've been real fortunate and also something that we've worked real hard on. And I'm not going to bore you guys with individual stories, but sure enough, I've worked real hard on this. Fortunate to have the partner that I do who turns in an incredible amount of work, and ultimately it's reflective and hopefully what we give you.
Yeah, man, we really like turning this product out for y'all. I mean, it's 11:25 at night here. We're finishing up the third of these. It's been a big success. I really like doing them. And, there's not a whole lot of regionally or state-focused podcasts that get approached by national advertising firms. You know, but once you hit certain benchmarks in the industry, all of a sudden they become real interested in talking to you. And until then, they don't really give you time of day. But we are one of the very, very few team-specific podcasts who routinely, get asked, hey, you want to come join our advertising network? And I'm like, nah, not really, because, I'd rather not. I don't want to have to compete against national podcasts. I like having great value to our advertisers on a state and regional basis, because we have a hyper-concentrated listening audience. I mean, 80% of our listeners are in Florida. That presents tremendous value to our advertisers who are based in Florida and based throughout the Southeast. Atlanta is our number one non-Florida market, by the way, if y'all were curious, which I'm guessing most of y'all could probably figure out. And the next one, or last one here, 3-star prospects like Trey Lawson have been guys worth taking because they have great upside and great physical tools, but when do you consider a project guy, quote-unquote, a bust? How long should they get to prove they belong at a program like FSU? Man, that's an interesting question. And I don't know that there's necessarily a cookie-cutter answer, right? Everybody has a different projected timeline. Mm-hmm. But I do think that projects need to make significant progress in whatever area in which they're deficient in year one. So if you come in and you're real skinny, in order for me to believe you're actually going to do something here, you better be putting on some legitimate weight in year one. If you're real overweight, you better be dropping some of that bad weight in year one. If you have no idea how to run a route, well, you better learn how to run a route, at least somewhat in year one. Because otherwise, you're just too far behind the eight ball. And at a program like Florida State, they're going to just recruit over you and bring in somebody who in year one is better than you are in year two if you don't yourself make significant progress in year one. So that's kind of how I would answer that.
I think you made a great point about either a physical transformation or if there's a you know, if there's a legitimate reason why maybe you weren't a major prospect or more highly thought of coming out of high school, if you don't start to see that change, I'll also say, and Bud's right, there is no definitive timeline, but if you're not starting to see flashes of it on the practice field in year two, then I would start to become real concerned. Doesn't mean that you need to have a starter. Doesn't mean that you even need to have somebody that is routinely contributing on game day. But if you're not starting to have flashes and you're not starting to show a real, you know, a real feel for the game or a real feel for your particular position, then if it's not there by your third spring, then and more times than not, it's not going to be present.
All right, man. I feel like this was a great series of Q&As, and we look forward to doing future shows as well. Appreciate, you know, 5 stars on iTunes whenever y'all get a chance, and we'll talk to you next time.
This concludes this episode of the Knollcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenollcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Knollcast. All right, so this is the final part of the mother of all mailbag shows. Trying to get to every single question y'all had for us. We try to get to as many as possible. Did a really good job, I think, of getting everything out there. I think next we got some recruiting updates. Junior Day's coming up. A lot of great stuff coming this off season. Today's date is February 22nd, 2018. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.